He's with him, she had that spark, that burning. If Matthias was as smart and handsome as his father said, he would have no use for a wife such as her. And she did not want to be a wife. Never a wife. She had left behind love and ridden off to a future devoid of power. "I have nothing," she whispered. Nikolai nudged his horse even closer to hers until their legs brushed. "You still have us," he said, his voice soft with understanding. "We will figure something out." Lada nodded, trying not to let her despair show. How much longer could she hope to keep Nikolai, Stefan, Petru, and the rest of her men? Would they choose to stay loyal to her over someone with a reputation and power like Hunyadi's? Not if they remained with him for much longer. "We break from Hunyadi at the first opportunity." She did not know how he would react, but he had more men than she did. She would not risk their lives against him. Until the right opportunity came up, she would grit her teeth and dodge all talk of marriage. At camp 2 days later, Hunyadi huddled with three of his men. Though Lada had been avoiding him, the intensity of the men's conversation hinted at something new. It might be an opportunity for her men to make an exit, or it might mean she was in trouble. Lada marched over and shouldered her way in. "What is happening?" Hunyadi looked up, surprised.
"There is an armed force of Bulgars coming our way. They are in a canyon. If we let them get out, they can spread and form ranks. Our best option is to ride and meet them."
"But you do not have enough time to plan."
"Attack is my favorite form of defense."
Lada let the phrase turn over in her mind. It reminded her of something. Tohin, the Ottoman woman who had taught her how to use gunpowder in combat. She had spoken of the need to constantly be on the attack so that other countries did not invade Ottoman lands. Push out so no one can push in. A dealer of death. That was what Tohin had said one must become. Deal enough death elsewhere to keep it away from your own home.
"What kind of force?" Lada asked.
One of Hunyadi's men let out a dismissive huff of air at Lada's inclusion in the conversation, but Hunyadi answered.
"Mounted, heavily armored."
Hunyadi had some armored men who could meet such a force head-on. But Lada's men wore light mail, unsuited to direct combat. Hunyadi must have followed her thoughts.
"This is not a battle for your Yanacheris. I will keep them in the rear."
Lada bristled. She knew her men were worth twice Hunyadi's. He would know that too, were he not so focused on her as a marriage prospect. But she bit her tongue before she could argue. If Hunyadi was engaged in a canyon and her men were in the rear, it was as good an opportunity as any to flee. She sighed, feeling these new threads to the throne snap one by one. She was left, as always, with her only thread of power, herself. They rode fast through flat, open farmland until they came to the threat. Canyon walls rose before them, a narrow gash through a leagues-long line of rocky, steep hills, the only easy passage for mounted troops. Lada saw immediately why Hunyadi needed to stop the Bulgars before they exited the canyon. Once through, they had a straight shot to anywhere in Hungary they wanted. Shouts drifted to Lada on the sharp breeze. Hunyadi was riding his horse back and forth in front of his men. A scout appeared, his horse heaving and frothing. Lada saw Hunyadi's shoulders tense as he listened to the report. He said something, then pointed at her. The scout nodded. Raising a fist, Hunyadi roared. His men roared in response and charged after him into the canyon. Had he told the scout to make certain she did not leave? Lada smiled grimly. She would welcome that. She rode to meet the scout. He trembled atop his trembling horse.
"What is it?" she demanded. "Hunyadi asks that you watch. If Bulgars begin to come through, ride hard for the nearest village and get the people out."
He pointed to the east, where Lada could see half-smoke lazily marking the village's location.
"Does he expect the Bulgars to break through?"
The man shrugged warily.
"More men than we thought. Too many."
"Why did he go in, then?"
If they get through, they will burn the village and take all the winter stores. The people will starve.
Larda frowned.
But it is one village,
the man smiled bleakly.
It is his village, though. He grew up there.
Larda rode her horse slowly back to her men, the information nagging at her. They could leave. No one could stop them, but Hunyadi could have left too, regrouped elsewhere, let one small village fall.
Damn his honor, Larda grumbled, staring back into the canyon. Hunyadi's forces had already disappeared around a bend. It would not be long before they met the enemy.
Both would be trapped and constricted by the canyon. It would be a slaughter on both sides.
It was not her problem, but her eyes went to the rim of the canyon.
It would be impassable for heavily armored mounted soldiers, but that did not mean it was impassable for everyone. She needed an ally. She needed more threads of power, and if she could prove to Hunyadi what she was capable of, then maybe she would have them. She could run, again, or seize this chance.
Larda jumped off her horse and grabbed her weapons. Dismount! Take everything you can easily carry! Nikolai, take men up the other side in case this one is impassable.
What are we doing?
Petru asked, already following her lead.
We are going to take a look.
They ran up the hill, scrambling between trees and boulders. Everyone found a different path and fanned out. Larda led the way, running and sliding and climbing. It was not easy going, but they made good time. The sound of men and horses screaming drew them closer to their goal. Finally, scraped and sweating, they reached the rim of the canyon immediately above the fighting. Both sides had bottlenecked, leaving only a few men in front to fight. When those men died, the next went at it. Larda looked down the Bolgar line. It stretched too far. They could push harder and longer. Hunyadi was not far beyond the front line. Everyone there would die. He had to know that, had to have known it going in. But he had left Larda's men behind. If she had been in charge, she would have sacrificed someone else's men to wear down the other side. Instead, he had kept them out of the battle with a charge to protect the village if his efforts failed. Hunyadi had killed her father and brother. Before that, he had been the reason her father ransomed her to the Ottomans. And he had invited her to join his troops with only a marriage in mind. She had every reason to let him die, even if she was grateful he had protected her men. But Valahia called to her, and she had to answer. How could she win this for him?
They will all be killed, Petru said, frowning.
Larda and her men were too high up for accuracy with arrows and bolts, and the Bolgars wore heavy armor. They would waste all their ammunition with very little effect. But...
Have you ever heard the story of David and Goliath?
Larda remembered that one. She only really cared for the old stories, the ones about battles and lions and armies. She had no use for Jesus with his parables and healing. She liked the wrathful God, the God of vengeance and war. She picked up a large stone, tossing it in the air a few times. Larda looked across the canyon at Nikolai. She hefted the rock, then pointed at the rear of the Bolgar line. There was an area of the hill that spoke of years of rock slides. No trees, dirt recently churned up. And at the canyon's rim, a collection of boulders waited patiently for time and the elements to free them. Larda mimed pushing, then let the rock fall from her hands. Nikolai looked at the boulders. He waved an arm, then ran with Stefan and several men toward the boulders. Larda waited, Petru crouching next to her. The sound of the battle beneath them was terrible. She had never seen one this big, this close. She watched, fascinated. It was not what she had expected. Her only experience with hand-to-hand combat had been with assassins, or in practice. She saw how Hunyadi directed his men, how even from the ground he acted as though he had an aerial view. She also saw how, in spite of his intelligence, he would lose. He had chosen honor instead of practicality. He should have sacrificed her men to slow the Bolgars, then regrouped elsewhere, ignoring the threat to his village. But he had not counted on her. A clatter that shifted to a rumble snapped Larda's attention back to Nikolai's work. The boulders crashed down, accompanied by a huge plume of dust. The fallen boulders were not enough to fully block the canyon, but they were enough to make it impossible to get more than one man at a time back the way they had come. Hunyadi looked up. Catching sight of Larda, he shouted something, gesturing angrily toward the rocks. Larda laughed, knowing what it looked like. They had just guaranteed that the Bolgars could only go forward into Hunyadi. Larda picked up a rock so heavy she had to use both arms. Then, with a loud whoop, she threw it. The rock sailed downward, landing with a metallic thunk on the helmeted head of a soldier in the middle of the Bolgar ranks. He slumped in his saddle, then slid to the ground. On either side of the canyon, Larda's men set to work. There was no shortage of rocks. The Bolgars were packed in so tightly that there was no need to aim. Throw a rock, hit something. It was as simple as that. The Bolgars started to panic, trying to shift out of the way, but there was nowhere to go. Their horses screamed. Soldiers dismounted and tried to climb up the sides of the canyon. They were met with rocks. A few kept their wits and pulled out crossbows, but the distance was too great and Larda's men had too much cover. The Bolgars in front made a desperate push, but Hunyadi had grasped that his role was to block them. He set up a firm line, impervious to the chaotic attacks of the Bolgars, and then waited. By evening, Larda's arms screamed with weariness as she tossed a last rock down. Then, exhausted, she sat. Nikolai and her men on the other side of the canyon followed suit. There were so few Bolgars left, it would be easy for Hunyadi's men to pick them off with crossbow bolts. It looked as though a careless god had passed through, tossing bodies aside like refuse. Men and horses clogged the path, broken and tangled together. When Larda and her men stumbled down from the hills, they were greeted with roaring fires and waiting food. Hunyadi's men cheered, welcoming them with open arms. Hunyadi pushed through to Larda. He picked her up and spun her in a circle. "That was brilliant," he shouted, laughing. She waited until he put her down. Then she met his gaze with an unsmiling and unflinching one of her own. "Yes," she said, "it was. You are no king, and I am no wife. I am a leader and a ruler, and I want your support." Hunyadi nodded solemnly, his fingers once again disappearing into his beard. "You have much value outside of marriage." He did not say it jokingly or dismissively. Larda could see in his eyes that he considered her differently now. She stood a little straighter. She had done something good. She had secured an ally through her own merits, and she would use him however she could to destroy her enemies. Nine. March. It was a festive day in the port city of Bursa. Ribbons adorned everything, whipping gaily in the perpetual wind that blew from the Sea of Marmara and through the streets. Children laughed, darting through the press of people. Vendors called out their goods, mostly food, and most of that fish, over the noise of the crowds. Radu let the crowd pull them along. Nazira pointed out a young girl carrying a screaming toddler nearly as big as herself. The toddler managed to wriggle out of her arms. The little girl grabbed his wrist and dragged him on determinedly. "Does that make you miss your sister?" Nazira asked. Radu shook his head. Larda would never have been so tender.
"I wish I had gotten to know her better."
"No, you do not." Nazira stopped, looking into Radu's eyes.
"Yes, I do. Because she is important to you, and you are important to me. So, she is important to me."
Radu shifted away from acknowledging Larda's importance to him. He tried not to think about it, or whether he was actually important to her. He had made his choice. Again.
"You would not like her, and she would not like you."
Nazira sniffed, lifting her nose haughtily.
Everyone likes me. Just because you could not make your terror of a sister be civil does not mean I would have fared so poorly. I am the sweetest person alive. Or have you not heard?
Radu laughed, taking her hand and rushing through a brief opening in the square. I have heard, and received ample evidence to support the rumor. After a few stops for Nazira to purchase ribbons for waving, they reached the docks. It took some time to find a spot to stand, but people tended to make way once they noticed Radu and Nazira's fine clothing. Radu still dressed the part of a frivolous member of the court, with bright robes and as much jewelry as he owned. Nazira wore her status with the easy grace of one born to it. The day was brilliantly sunny, the warmth cut through by the wind. Light reflected off the churning water, and small waves slapped at the dock they stood on. Out on the water were Radu's ships. Well, the Empire's ships. But Radu felt a flush of pride looking at them. He had visited the construction docks under the pretense of going to his country estate with Nazira. Suleiman was ambitious but practical. Under his hand, everything went according to schedule. And now before them were the fruits of their labors. It was a glorious sight to behold. Nazira pointed out the different types.
Three of the big ones. What are they called?
Galleys, the largest ships the Empire has ever owned. All brand new.
And those five medium ones?
Also galleys. Three are older, two are new. Nazira sniffed in disappointment.
They should really be cleverer with naming them that. Big galleys and medium galleys. What about the smaller ones moving between them?
Radu laughed. You are going to be disappointed.
Galleys?
Yes. She scowled crossly.
I should have been consulted. Still, it is amazing. Look at them all. How can the water hold that much weight? Oh, they are moving.
Sails unfurled. Though the ships were too far out for Radu to see their decks, he knew the sailors would be scrambling to tie things off and adjust the sails to capture the wind. There would be even more men on benches manning the long, heavy oars for navigating rivers. The boats danced on the water, cutting through the waves or skimming on top of them, depending on their size. Every time a boat maneuvered particularly well, the crowd cheered. After a few minutes, all the galleys lined up near the shore and stopped there, close enough for the onlookers to see the flurry of on-deck activity. And then the cannons fired across the water, away from the bank. Though the ships could not bear the load of too much heavy artillery, the sound was terrible and impressive. Babies and children cried in fear and surprise. Everyone else clapped and waved their ribbons in the air. Never before had the Ottomans had such a navy. Never before had any of them seen such a demonstration. Radu smiled, because he knew the truth. This was only half of their fleet. The other half was hidden in a boatyard on a little used section of one of the tributary rivers.
There he is.
Nazira's quiet voice broke through the noise. Radu turned to see Mahmed standing on a balcony. He wore deepest purple, with a red turban and a blindingly white cape. Nazira and Radu were not the only ones to notice him. Much of the crowd turned to cheer and wave their ribbons at him. Radu was too far away to be sure, but he thought Mahmed smiled. Radu pretended that the smile was for him and joined the cheering.
We should take more holidays together, Nazira said, leaning back in their carriage. Fatima does not like to go to new places. It was all I could do to persuade her to stay in Edirne for this long. She loves familiar things. Routine.
Nazira smiled fondly.
She has settled in nicely there, though. As long as she does not have to go out among crowds.
I did not know she had such a hard time with them. Radu watched the countryside pass by. He tried to hold on to the happy pride of seeing his work dance on the water. But the same scene kept playing out in his mind. Instead of being on the dock with Nazira, he had been on the balcony at Mahmed's side. As Mahmed watched the triumph of Radu's planning, he shifted closer and closer. And then their hands, at their sides, brushed. Instead of pulling away, Mahmed's fingers linked with Radu's, and they stood like that, watching the ships together.
Yes,
Nazira said, puncturing Radu's fantasy, which was just as well. It was poisonous, dwelling on such things.
Fatima does not. You see, when she was very young, she
paused, frowning.
I do not think it is my story to tell.
I understand. He took Nazira's hand, which felt nothing like Mahmed's had in his imagination. I wonder if anyone gets through childhood without being broken. I certainly did not.
Oh, I had a wonderful childhood. Our parents died when I was too young to understand it. Kumar made certain that my life was filled with love and joy. And then, when I discovered Fatima shared my feelings, I had even more love and joy. And then, when you married me, even more. I sometimes think I am the most blessed woman in all of creation. I pray God gives me an opportunity to repay all the kindness he has shown me.
They had entered the city. The buildings rose around them like guests at a party, familiar, all of them, but hiding so much. Radu squeezed Nazira's hand. You have nothing to repay. Your life is filled with the goodness you attract because of your own goodness. Nazira laughed, then grew solemn.
I do wish to do more, though. Be more. Maybe someday.
She looked down, blushing, holding her stomach. Are you feeling ill? We have been in the carriage too long. They had left Bursa earlier than anticipated. They were back in the city a full day before planned. He was heading straight for the foundry to check in on Urbana. She looked up, blinking rapidly.
Ill? No, no, I am well. Radu, I wondered.
She paused, sucking in her round lips.
Would you join us for a meal? A special family meal? Next week?
The carriage stopped in front of the narrow street leading to the foundry. Radu gave Nazira a quick kiss on the cheek. Of course. Give my love to Fatima.
And give mine to Urbana?
Radu laughed. Urbana would not care in the slightest for your love, unless it came with extra supplies of bronze, or a new furnace. Though Radu did not like the intense heat of the foundry, he visited as often as he could. And it was a good thing he had come back when he did. Urbana was screaming in Hungarian at several confused workers. Radu jumped in as translator, though he left out most of what she said. He did not think telling the workers that they were more useless than the rotting carcasses of 1,000 dead dogs would help morale. Later that afternoon, he leaned against the entrance and watched a small caravan approach. Urbana had told him they were expecting a delivery, but Radu did not anticipate the grizzled woman who showed up with the gunpowder. She climbed down from her cart, her back arched like a crescent moon. Radu moved to help her, but she waved him away.
I can manage, you young fool.
A bit stung by her dismissiveness, older women usually loved him. He directed two men to begin unloading the barrels of gunpowder. The woman watched warily. Another cart pulled up behind hers. A man jumped out to aid the unloading process.
How many, mother?
He called.
All of it, she shook her head. That arse cannot keep a number greater than 3 in his head.
Radu frowned at her lack of maternal softness. She turned her critical eye on him, taking in his robes. He had taken to wearing jewel tones lately, bright and bold colours to combat how he felt on the inside.
Who put you in charge of so much gunpowder?
She asked. Radu tried on his best smile, but it slid off his face. It would make no difference with this woman. We are building the largest cannon in the world. It could take down the walls of Babylon itself. The woman snorted.
Nothing quite so useful as an imaginary cannon to defeat a city that no longer exists. I can see all my work and travel has been useless. One of these days I will be asked to do another stupid thing, and I will finally hit my limit on idiocy. I have a husband and 3 sons, so my limit is very high, but even I cannot bear all things. And on that day, there will be an explosion to take down the walls of every actual city in the world.
Radu shifted on his feet, wishing the men would hurry up so this horrible woman would leave.
"You are not Turkish," she said.
Radu shook his head.
"Valahian,"
she nodded, toying with several long white hairs on her chin.
"Not a lot of Valahians in the Empire. Too stupid to be useful. But I met a good Valahian a few years ago. Made an impression on me. I never forgot her."
With a shock like a cannon burst, Radu tuned in to the woman's words.
"Her? Mean little bitch," the woman smiled with tenderness, an emotion that looked out of place on her. "Clever as anyone. It was out in... where was it? I forget."
"Amasya," Radu said softly.
"That was it? You know her?"
"Lada, my sister." Her gaze grew even more critical as she looked him up and down.
"You do not seem like siblings."
Radu smiled tightly. "I am aware of that."
"Well, I always wondered what she might do. A bright, vicious mind like that. And those men followed her without question. She made me feel younger."
A sprig of affection rose in Radu's chest. It was strange talking to someone who had known Lada and admired her. Not in the way Mahmed admired her. That did not ever make Radu happy. But this gnarled old woman's memories made Radu miss his sister.
"Where is she now?" the woman asked.
"In Hungary, I believe."
"What is she doing there?"
"That is anyone's guess."
"Well, whatever it is, it will not end well for anyone who gets in her way. The world will destroy her in the end. Too much spark leads to explosions."
She patted a barrel of gunpowder that had not yet been unloaded.
"But your sister will destroy as much as she can before she goes out."
The old woman's eerie prophecy rubbed at Radu like an ill-fitting collar.
"Perhaps she will find a balance." "No, she will go down in flames and blood."
The woman smiled fondly.
"If you write her, tell her Towin sends her regards."
Then, her eye catching something else, she shouted at her son.
"Timur, did you check the way they are storing them?"
"Yes, mother,"
Timur said. Towin stomped toward the storage building. Timur shook his head, giving Radu a long, suffering smile.
"I have 3 children of my own, and she would still dress me if she could. You know how mothers are."
Radu's returned smile was reflexive. He did not, in fact, know how mothers were, but he knew what it was to have someone watching out for him. He stared at the remaining barrels, wondering. Lada was already playing with fire, taking up with Hunyadi. She might respect the man, but he had never shown kindness to their family. Who knew what purpose he had in taking her in? Radu had been flattered and angry when she demanded he come help her, but perhaps he should have been afraid. For Lada to ask for help, surely she was teetering on the edge of the destructive end the old woman saw for her. And though she had never asked for Radu's help growing up, he had helped her. He had worn away her edges, talked their way out of trouble she would have welcomed. Maybe she had always needed him. And he always chose Mahmed. Someone shouted his name and he hurried back to his duties. His duties to his god. His duties to the Ottoman Empire. His duties to Mahmed. Lada would have to figure it out on her own. He owed her nothing. But the promise of the guilt he would carry if she died without his help clung to his skin like a shadow. 10. February. Lada tracked a group of 50 Yanicheris. They were a long-range frontier group used for enforcing the Empire's will in vassal states. Hunyadi had no particular reason to attack the Yanicheris, but he demanded no reason to kill Turkish forces. Up until now, they had only fought more Bulgars, brief flashes of blood and screaming and swords breaking up monotonous riding, camping, sleeping outside. Lada was proud of her men. They were as good as or better than any that Hunyadi rode with. And he noticed, after their canyon victory, Hunyadi frequently consulted with Larda and asked her advice. She had studied his tactics, but only on paper and in theory. Watching him in the field was something else entirely. He always thought 3 days ahead. Food, water, defensible locations. But he was not so set on plans that he could not respond with lightning-fast force to an unexpected threat or opportunity. This Yanacheri group was one such opportunity. Larda looked uneasily at Nikolai next to her. "What do you think?" she asked. "I think they could have been me." She looked back at the men they stalked. He was right. They were the same. Boys stolen and turned into soldiers who served another land and another god. "We let them go, then," Larda said. She could not help imagining Nikolai on the other side of the meadow, or Bogdan, or Stefan, or Petru, or any of her men. She did not want to feel this companionship with the Yanacheris, but it could not be avoided. The Yanacheris came to a sudden stop. Larda tensed, fearing they had discovered her 10 men tracking them. Instead, they shifted direction and started heading straight for Hunyadi's camp. Larda gestured sharply. Her men ran, silent and low, to the ground. She pantomimed, drawing crossbows. Still running, they fixed their bolts. If the Yanacheris did not already know the camp was there, they would in a few minutes. Hunyadi would be caught unaware. Larda gestured to her men to head back to the camp.
"Go warn them," Larda whispered to Nikolai. "What are you going to do?"
"Delay them, idiot.
Now go!"
Nikolai disappeared into the woods. Larda stood.
"The Sultan is the son of a donkey!" she shouted in Turkish.
The Yanacheris turned as one, arrows already knocked bows and pointed in her direction. She had cover, but it would not take them long to find her. She darted to another tree.
"I am sorry. I should not have said that about the Sultan. It is an offense to donkeys, which are perfectly serviceable creatures."
Larda peeked around the tree. Their weapons still at the ready, the Yanacheris were searching the dense foliage for threats. Larda laughed loudly, the sound ringing through the trees.
"Are you Yanacheris? I have heard that Yanacheris are not fit to lick the dust from Spahi boots."
"Who is there?"
an angry voice shouted, while another cursed her. Their leader barked an order for them to be quiet. Then he called out,
"Show yourself, woman!"
"Why do Bulgars make terrible farmers?" she answered.
There was silence. She peered from behind the trunk, amused to see the Yanacheris trading confused looks. Most of them had lowered their bows when no attack came.
"What?" the commander shouted.
"I said, why do Bulgars make terrible farmers?"
One of the Yanacheris in front sheathed his sword.
"I do not know."
The commander barked at him for silence, but the Yanacheri shrugged.
"I want to know."
"So do I,"
another called. Most of them nodded, a few grinning at this odd forest interlude.
"Because they confuse the pigs for Bulgar women and cannot bear to slaughter their wives."
A chorus of snickering laughs broke out.
"Who are you?"
one of the men called.
"You should not be in these woods. It is not safe."
A volley of arrows rained from the sky onto the men.
"I know,"
Larda said, coming from behind the tree and letting her shaft join the others. After, when the work of killing was done, Larda took no pleasure in the white-capped bodies on the ground. Stepping over the corpses, Hunyadi found her and clasped her hand in his.
"How did you think to distract them like that?"
She lifted a shoulder as they walked back toward camp.
"They are soldiers. They depend upon routine, and anything out of the ordinary will give them pause. And they are men. They hate to be insulted, but they love to hear others mocked. And they are fools, because they cannot imagine that a woman alone in the woods would be a threat."
Later, around a campfire, Larda sat next to Hunyadi. Nikolai was on her other side. The men traded stories like coins, each trying to make his the most valuable, the brightest. Petru mimed being struck through the eye with an arrow so dramatically he nearly fell into the fire. Larda remembered a time not so long ago when some of these same men had come back from fighting, and she had been forced to listen to stories she feared she would never be part of. Now she was at the center, truly belonging.
"How did you find your men?"
Hunyadi asked. He spoke Turkish around her men as a courtesy, since most of them did not speak Hungarian, and his Valachian was dreadful.
"We found her,"
Nikolai said, beaming proudly.
"Or I did, at least. It is a funny story.
When Larda was this small," he held his hand close to the ground, then squinted at her.
"Well, she is still that small."
Larda punched him in the shoulder, hard. He rubbed it, grimacing.
"When Larda was not the towering giantess of a woman that she is today, she was in Amasya as a playmate of the little zealot. Back then no one knew he would be sultan. He was just a brat."
Larda nodded and quickly erased the wistful smile threatening to break through her expression.
"She was spying on us while we trained. We caught her. Then, when she beat up poor Ivan..."
Nikolai paused.
"Whatever happened to Ivan?"
"I killed him," Larda said without thinking.
You killed him? I thought he was moved to a different city. Why did you kill him?"
Larda realized the low, steady hum of conversation around them had died. All eyes were on her. Most of her men had never known Ivan. She wished she had not either. He had been stupid and cruel, had always hated her. In the end, he had tried to force himself on her as proof she was nothing but a girl. Something he could take, something he could break. She lifted her chin.
"That is none of your concern."
Hunyadi laughed.
"Spoken like a true leader," he said in Hungarian.
She met his gaze and he gave her a slight nod, something fierce and proud in his eyes. She saw how he sat straight, even while relaxing with his men. He was still in charge, still slightly apart. She mimicked his posture. She was their leader. She did not owe them explanations, especially not for traumas of the past.
"Wait," Petru said, concern pulling down his features and making him look like a puppy. "Did you kill Bogdan too? Is that why he is gone?"
Larda sighed in exasperation.
"No, I did not kill Bogdan. But I might kill you if you act out that stupid arrow through the eye death one more time."
Bogdan found them. How he tracked them down, Larda did not know. But the next week he walked into camp with a grin so giddy she could not understand how his blocky features managed it. Larda ran to him. Her first impulse was to throw her arms around him. Her second was to hit him for taking so long. Instead, she stood in front of him, glaring at his beloved stupid face and his beloved stupid ears and his beloved stupid self.
"Where have you been?"
"I brought something you need."
"More men?"
She looked behind Bogdan, but only one person followed him. And that person was not a man. She walked with a solid assurance. Her long hair trailed down her back in a braid, showing off two ears sticking out like jug handles.
"Larda,"
her old nurse said, rushing forward and embracing her. Larda's arms were pinned to her sides by the woman's hug. How Bogdan had found his mother, Larda could not begin to fathom. But he was Bogdan. He stayed loyal to the women in his life. Larda looked at him.
"Why did you bring her?"
"To help," he said, shrugging. "You needed someone who could help you with... girl things."
He paused, blushing.
"Woman things?"
Larda clenched her jaw, grinding her teeth together. "I do not need anyone's help with anything."
"Where is your brother?" the nurse asked. "He should be here. I thought you would take better care of him."
Anger flared. Who was this woman to tell Larda how to take care of Radu? The nurse had not been there in Adirna. She had not seen what they had gone through, what Larda had had to do to survive.
"He is coming,"
Larda said through still gritted teeth. She extricated herself from her nurse's arms.
"Let me brush your hair,"
the nurse said, reaching for Larda's snarls. The sensation made Larda feel like a child again. She stumbled back, flinging her hands up to deflect the woman's touch.
"I do not need a nurse."
You said the same when you were five, but at least your hair was presentable then. Take yourself to the devil, Larda snapped. Bogdan looked hurt, but her nurse just laughed. The woman's eyes shone with something, mirth or affection, neither of which were tolerable to Larda. Worst of all, Hunyadi was sitting nearby, watching the whole encounter. Where is my cloak? She snapped, yanking clothes out of her saddlebag. Let your nurse help you find it, Nikolai teased. He and Petru were sitting at the campfire. Had no one missed this spectacle? What had Bogdan been thinking? She is not my nurse, Petru shrugged. You are lucky. I wish I had someone to take care of me. Maybe I should find a wife. Maybe you could marry the nurse, Larda spat out. Giving up on the cloak, she threw herself onto her horse and left camp. They had moved from the location of the slaughtered Yanacheris and were working their way toward the capital. The increasingly frequent sections of frosted farmland made Hunyadi's hands twitch. When asked where they were going, he would merely shrug. The castle. It sounded like a foreign word when he said it. Today, though, they were in a heavily forested section of the countryside. They had not seen another soul all day, but that did not mean they were alone. Larda scanned the trees as a matter of habit, one hand always on her sword. The trees were as bare and cold as the air. The sun was overhead, but all it did was blind her. How could something be so bright and give so little warmth? After so long in the temperate climate of Amarcia, she had forgotten what winter felt like. Right now, she wanted nothing more than to be back there. No, she screamed at her traitorous heart. She did not mean back in the Empire. She meant back at camp, around a fire, with her men. The nurse would be there, lingering, hovering, much like a fly that buzzed incessantly, but at least a fly Larda could swat. She did not need another woman. She did not need to be taken care of. That woman was not her mother. Her own mother had fled to her home country of Moldavia when Larda was four. That was what mothers did. Nurses, apparently, were more dependable and embarrassing. Hunyadi pulled his horse alongside hers.
It might be good to have someone to help.
I do not see your nursemaid following you around, combing your hair. Hunyadi ran his fingers through his thick auburn locks.
I would not object. His tone softened. All leaders need help. Let someone do the mundane tasks so you can focus on the bigger ones. Surely Mahmed does not do anything himself.
Larda rolled her eyes. He has a man whose only role is to follow after him carrying a stool.
Does he even clean his own arse, I wonder?
Larda grimaced. Why would you put such an image in my mind? Hunyadi laughed loudly. Then he settled more deeply into his saddle, sighing happily.
This is a beautiful part of my country.
He reminds me of the forests outside Turgoviste. I used to make our tutor take us out there to study. The castle was an oven in the summer, and an ice box in the winter. I always suspected the architect was a cook.
Do you miss it?
Larda frowned as she followed the trail of a dark bird across the pale blue sky. Miss what?
Turgoviste.
I never cared for Turgoviste. I prefer the mountains.
But you still want the throne.
I want Valahia. Hunyadi huffed a laugh.
Is that all?
It is far less than what Mahmed... She stopped, biting off the rest of the sentence. How dare he slip out of her mouth uninvited? Hunyadi leaned closer to Larda, his horse following the movement and nearly brushing its flanks against her legs.
So, he does mean to go for Constantinople, then?
Larda had avoided talking about Mahmed's plans. It felt disloyal, which made her angry. He had shown no loyalty to her by entertaining the usurper Dinesh Prince. Hunyadi pressed on.
The general opinion is that he is young and easily swayed. More interested in lavish parties and well-stocked harems than expansion.
If Larda flinched at the mention of the harem, Hunyadi pretended not to notice. He continued.
Everyone has solidified advantageous treaties with him. No one fears him. Murad's death was seen as the end of Ottoman expansion. But I wonder. I think the Sultan is settling us all down, so his way to Constantinople is clear.
The word harem still rang in Lada's ears. Obviously, Mehmed was not loyal to her. He spied on her. He supported her rivals. She owed him nothing, and would cut this traitorous impulse to protect him out of her heart. Constantinople is his only desire. Everything he does, however innocent-seeming or counterintuitive, is to achieve that goal and that goal only. He will not stop until it is his capital, until he is both Sultan of the Ottoman Empire and Caesar of Rome. Hunyadi breathed out heavily, slumping in his saddle.
Do you think he can do it?
If any man can, he will.
I feared as much.
He rubbed his face, tugging on the ends of his graying moustache.
When do you think he will move?
As soon as possible. This spring or next.
That changes everything. We will head to Hunidwara tonight. I have letters to write and a crusade to plan.
You would defend Constantinople?
Of course.
But it is not your city, not your people. And it is no closer to Hungary's borders than the Ottomans already are. So there is no increased military threat. Hunyadi smiled.
I am Christian, Lada. It is my duty to rally to Constantinople's cause. It is the last we have of the mighty Roman Empire. I will be damned if I let the Turks take it.
He pulled his horse to a stop, then paused before turning.
I would be honored if you were at my side. I think together we could hold off the very forces of hell.
Lada was glad he was not facing her. The warm flush of pride at his words was something she wanted to keep private. XI. Late March.
When will it be ready?
Radu demanded, the air shimmering with heat.
When it is ready,
Urbana wiped sweat from her forehead as she used giant bellows to adjust the temperature of the flames in the nearest furnace.
I need it now,
she laughed, a sound like a hammer ringing against an anvil.
You need it now? I have needed it my whole life. The Basilica is my legacy, my genius. I will not risk blowing us all up with a faulty cannon so your schedule can be maintained.
Radu wiped the sweat that was dripping into his eyes.
Can you at least show me? We have both invested so much in it.
Huffing, Urbana led him to the back of the sweltering building. She pointed to a pit of sand that stretched more than 4 times longer than Radu was tall.
There it is.
When will it be cool enough?
2 days.
Urbana leaned against the wall, staring at the sand as though she could succeed by sheer force of will.
If there are no cracks or fissures, if, God willing, it actually worked this time, we can demonstrate it for your precious Sultan in 2 days.
She patted a 600-pound stone cannonball with the tender affection of a mother.
It will work, Radu said.
It had to. It would prove once and for all that he was the better Dracul sibling, the more valuable, the more deserving of love. And it would prove to himself that he had made the right choice in staying. The ambassadors from Constantinople arrived the next day. Radu no longer stood next to Mehmed in the receiving hall, but near the back and off to the side. Normally, Radu would have liked to see the ambassadors squirming. Mehmed was still acting the silly, spoiled sultan, but it was all so tiresome. He was ready for this interminable waiting period to be over. Constantinople needed to fall. When they marched, then everything would be better. Everything would be revealed. Radu would reclaim his place next to Mehmed. They would take the walls together. And Lada would be nowhere near, either physically or in Mehmed's thoughts. When Constantinople fell, Mehmed would have what he wanted most. He would forget the girl who had left them behind. He would know who had been with him, helping him every step of the way. he would finally see Radu's whole worth. Radu refocused on what was being said, though the ambassadors kept trying to steer the conversation back to the fortress Mahmed had built on their side of the strait. Mahmed could not be trapped.
"We should have a feast, a party,"
he smiled distractedly, leaning over to whisper to a man taking notes.
"Fish. No, lamb. No, fish. Both."
The lead ambassador cleared his throat.
"But we must discuss the matter of the land. You killed citizens from a nearby village."
Mahmed waved dismissively.
"Our men defended themselves against attack. It is nothing. Tell me, do you like dancing? What style of dance do they favor in Constantinople now?"
The lead ambassador, who wore a blue coat that was open to reveal a bright red vest, shifted from foot to foot.
"At the very least, we must demand payment for the land you took."
The other five ambassadors remained perfectly still. Mahmed's smile chilled even Radu.
"Yes. Payment. We would say a great deal is owed Constantinople. Very soon every debt will be erased."
A silence as thick as blood had descended on the room. Mahmed laughed, suddenly the bright, happy young sultan again. He clapped his hands.
"A party, tonight. You can show us how they dance in Constantinople. We will make you all dance."
Mahmed leaned toward Kumal, engaging him in conversation and effectively ignoring the ambassadors. They stayed where they were, shuffling their feet or clearing their throats. Mahmed had not dismissed them, so they could not leave. Radu could not see their faces from where he stood, but he did not imagine they looked happy. Then one, the nearest to him, turned. It was the ambassador with the grey eyes who had delivered a gift, a book, to Mahmed upon his coronation. Radu was surprised at how easily he recognized the young man after more than a year, and it appeared the ambassador recognized him as well. His eyebrows lifted in shock, and then he smiled grimly, shrugging his shoulders toward the throne. Radu answered with a similar smile. To Radu's surprise, the ambassador took it as an invitation. He left his companions and made his way to Radu's side.
"You stood next to the Sultan before,"
the ambassador said without preamble.
"Things change."
"They do."
"I am Cyprian. Radu."
Cyprian clasped Radu's hand, holding on for a few seconds more than seemed necessary. Radu was always deeply aware of touching, nervous to do anything out of the ordinary, as though someone might figure out he was not normal by the way he lingered in a hug or drew too close while standing. Cyprian did not seem to have this same worry. He leaned in close, his unusual eyes piercing Radu. They were the color of the sea on a stormy day, and had a similar effect on Radu as that of stepping onto a boat. The floor swam beneath him for a moment, until Cyprian looked away.
"Tell me, is there somewhere we could get a meal outside the palace?"
the ambassador asked.
"It is far colder here than I remembered."
It was, in fact, quite warm in the room in spite of the season, but Radu did not think Cyprian referred to the temperature.
"I am sorry,"
Radu found to his surprise that he actually was.
"We have a party to prepare for. I will find you there, then."
Bowing his head, Cyprian smiled, his eyes crinkling until they nearly disappeared. Radu thought Mahmed's smile the best in the world, but he could not deny that something about Cyprian's transformed his whole face in a way that made Radu feel some hope for the first time in days. As Radu was changing for the party, a knock came at his door. Opening it, he was shocked to find Mahmed standing there, exactly as he had hoped and dreamed.
My sultan,"
Radu bowed low.
"Stay here,"
Mahmed said to the Yanacheri guards, who always accompanied him. He brushed past Radu and waited for him to close the door. Radu's heart raced so loudly that he again wondered if Mahmed could hear it.
"What is it?"
Mahmed paced the small length of Radu's receiving room. His hands were clasped behind his back, his brows drawn tight.
"I have an idea."
"Oh?" Radu watched him, his presence filled the room, Mahmed did not talk further. Radu needed him to talk, needed to keep him here.
I have good news. A banner said we can test the basilica tomorrow. I wonder if we should make a demonstration of it. We could even invite the ambassadors, let them run back with tales of your astonishing artillery.
Mahmed's gaze was on the floor, and though he nodded, he did not seem to have really heard Radu.
I sent forces into the Peloponnese today. They will keep the emperor's brothers from going to his aid in Constantinople. As soon as our troops set up a line there, we have effectively declared war. But I think I will do it sooner.
Radu wished there was enough room to pace by Mahmed's side. He would burst if he had to remain by the door.
The cannon demonstration would be the perfect moment.
He could see it playing out. Everyone lining up, watching. The shock and awe of the court, the fear of the ambassadors, Mahmed looking at him with secret, joyful pride. And it was all Radu's doing. Without him, no one would have helped Abana. The cannon was his project alone. Radu's triumph would be used to declare war, and they could finally end this pretense at distance. Mahmed stopped. He narrowed his eyes at Radu, expression unreadable.
I saw that ambassador seeking you out.
What?
The young one. He sought you out the first moment he could.
Why? Radu scrambled to adjust the trajectory of his thoughts.
I do not know, actually. He wanted to take a meal together.
Was that all, he said?
He remarked on the difference in my post from last time, when I stood at your side.
Mahmed smiled. It had none of the warmth of Cyprian's smile.
That was what I had hoped. Radu, I need you to do something. Something I can trust no one else to do. Something only you can do for me. For the Empire. For the cause of our God.
Radu's heart beat even faster. Something only he could do for Mahmed.
Yes, anything. You know I would do anything. At the party, seek out the ambassador. Tell him you want to leave me. Tell him you want to aid Constantine with your knowledge of my plans. Tell him you wish to be a traitor.
Radu could not process what was being asked.
But then I will be in the city. How will I get back in time to join you? You will be more valuable to me behind the walls than any man on my side of them.
Radu could not pick which path of thought to follow. Happiness that he would be the most valuable man in the world to Mahmed. Fear of what he was being asked to do. Or disappointment that after all his planning and work, he would not stand with Mahmed at the wall.
How will I convince them? And if I do, what do you want me to tell Constantine?
Tell him anything you wish. In fact, tell him the truth. Tell him I am better prepared than anyone who has led forces against the wall.
Tell him of my navy, my cannons, my legions of men. Tell him Constantinople will fall. Or tell him that he has hope still. Either way, give him verifiable information and tell him you wish to fight at his side against the people who kidnapped you and stole your childhood.
But I do not think that. Mahmed put his hands on Radu's shoulders, steadying him, forcing Radu to meet his eyes.
I know. But he does not. You will be my eyes and hands behind the wall. I wanted to be with you.
Radu heard the longing in his own voice, but could not hide it. The idea of another separation, for a length of time no one could predict, was as cruel as a knife in his chest.
I need you elsewhere. Do you think you can do it?
Radu nodded, his head bobbing almost of its own volition.
The ambassador will trust you. He seemed to like you.
Radu came back to himself sharply. He searched Mahmed's face for a hint that there was something behind his words. Mahmed leaned closer, so close Radu could feel the other man's breath on his own lips.
Do not forget where your loyalties lie. Promise me.
It would be only a matter of leaning in to kiss. Radu managed to whisper,
I could never forget. Good.
Mahmed pressed his lips against Radu's forehead. Radu closed his eyes and resisted tipping his face up. Mahmed's lips were so close